We're going to get started. We don't yet have a quorum. This is the Committee on Local Government and Metropolitan Affairs, and today is Thursday, May 1st. Members, we are going to do four bills in 1 hour. So this is going to be a quick meeting. I'm going to continue to chair the meeting, even though I'm going to be presenting House File 4223. Members, this is basically a ditch bill, and we are going to be amending on the amendments that the Senate amended on to this to make this a little mini omnibus local government bill. So first, I'm going to welcome Joel Settles, is that correct? Joel Settles, if you could please briefly describe the bill that's before us. Mr. Settles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Joel Settles. I work for the Hennepin County Department of Environmental Services, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify on behalf of House File 4223. Basically, this bill will assist Hennepin County and water management authorities in Hennepin County manage these drainage systems more effectively and efficiently by providing an alternative procedure for transferring the jurisdiction of these drain systems to local management authorities. This bill only affects public ditches where Hennepin County is the ditch authority. That's a total of 17 drainage systems. The proposed transfer procedure does not force local water management authorities to accept the transfer, but rather facilitates the petition process. The existing transfer process places a significant financial burden on petitioners. I have discussed the proposed bill with the staff of all the affected water management organizations and have heard no objections to the bill from the water management organizations. The proposed bill is essentially a housekeeping measure that reflects how water resources are currently being managed in Hennepin County. Most of the drainage systems in Hennepin County were constructed prior to 1930. Obviously, land use and commercial agriculture have changed tremendously in Hennepin County since that time. So I wasn't on tape. I'll give my name again.
All right.
And so that's basically why we're doing it. We now have local special purpose units in place to manage water in Hennepin County, and we think it's more appropriate for these systems to be able to be transferred to them at low cost.
Great. Questions from members? All right. Seeing no questions from members. We don't yet have a quorum, so I can't yet move my amendments, but members, we're going to quick walk through them so that you know what we're going to do. First will be the SCS 3857A3 amendment. Members, all of these provisions that are within this amendment are bills that we've already passed out of this committee. They're either on the general register or they've met with some struggle in the Senate. It just hasn't gotten done, and so we are compiling them together. My goal has been to work with Representative Lanning to anything that seems to be controversial or significantly controversial to take it out of the bill. So after we adopt that amendment, then I will be offering the SCS 3857A4 amendment. And this is the outdoor food and beverage service. This is where you can permit the dogs to accompany the patrons to the food and beverage area. This is just a change in language. This is the language that we'd like. It's just a very slight difference, but this is the author's preference. Then there will be an oral amendment. We're going to delete sections 2 and 11 out of the A3 amendment. Those two sections are the Hortman's bill, which is the commuter rail bill, and we passed that off the floor yesterday, and it's on its way to the governor. So we don't need to pass it again because we certainly wouldn't want inconsistent language to end up going to the governor. Okay. So that's it for the amendment, right? What is this? Okay, that's another. So members, those will be the amendments when we have a quorum. Does anyone have any questions? All right, seeing no questions, how many more do we need? Members, we still need two more people. before we have a quorum.
I thought it would come back.
Yeah. No. One last thing, Representative Lanning, there are two bills that we've talked about. They're both Representative Hornstein's bills that we had spoke about taking out. They did not take them out in the Senate yesterday. If it would be all right with members, I'm happy to take them out here, or I'm happy to continue to talk with the Senate to get them out before they come to the floor, whatever your preference is. Representative Hornstein is dealing with an emergency in his family currently, and so he does have two bills that are on the calendar, and eventually someone's going to have to probably potentially carry them on, but that this might not be the vehicle to do that. Representative Downey, you have one of Representative Hornstein's bill. Yes, correct. Representative Biskin.
Madam Chair, I see Representative Paymar is in the room, and he's very familiar with one of Representative Hornstein's bills. Maybe he'd like to speak to it.
Well, that's the next bill, but he's not going to be speaking to these then. So we just need one more member. You know, members, if it's all right with you, I certainly can lay this bill over and let Representative Paymar start with Representative Hornstein's bill if there's no objection. Representative Paymar, go ahead. Come. And Representative Atkins, you get. I don't know how you did it in the last committee, if you both want to come to the table, we can start with House File 4015 or House File 4207. So, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have an amendment. I don't know if it's been passed out.
We do have it, but we don't have a quorum, so we can't take your amendment either yet. So,
I don't have it, so I don't even
have it.
I wonder if I could get a copy of it.
Have it.
Oh, I do have it. Wait, I do have
it. Okay, he does have it. All right, please go ahead.
Madam Chair, this bill has been through the Commerce Committee, and this, of course, is dealing with the situation at Northwest Airlines, and Representative Atkins had a lengthy hearing in Commerce, and we heard from Labor, we heard about the impact of Northwest Airlines' merger, and the purpose of House File 1415 is really to ensure that the covenants in place between Northwest Airlines and the state of Minnesota are met. These are binding agreements that came out of the 1991 state financing package that was clear that Northwest Airlines was to maintain a hub and a headquarters and Minnesota employment levels. And I just want to stress to the committee that it's my belief, and I think most members of the legislature, that these covenants are legally binding agreements, that the state financing package would not have happened without those covenants, and that our constituents expect nothing short of insisting that Northwest Airlines be held accountable for abiding by these covenants. So why this bill? Representative Hornstein and myself, we were concerned when we started hearing about the proposed merger about making sure that the state would be repaid the money that it loaned Northwest Airlines. And Northwest Airlines has had a history of reneging on its agreements to the state of Minnesota. And I think what particularly concerned me was Doug Steenland's public quote when he said that keeping major operations here is in compliance with the spirit of the law, with the loan. When asked about whether moving the hub violated the covenants of the loan, and that's what he said, that keeping major air operations here is in compliance with the spirit of the loan. So I think that there's some credibility issues here with Mr. Steenland and Northwest Airlines. And so this bill ensures that the covenants are honored. The bill ensures that MAC acts on behalf of the taxpayers. I said at the Commerce Committee, I'll say it here, I don't trust Northwest Airlines, I don't trust Delta Airlines, and I don't have a whole lot of faith in the Metropolitan Airports Commission. So that's why there's a provision in this agreement that the MAC shall not enter into any agreement to modify, amend, or eliminate the covenant referenced in this section without agreement first being approved by law, which means that the state of Minnesota would have to sign off on it. So that's basically the bill. It's to protect Minnesota taxpayers. I have
I hope that the MAC can negotiate some good agreements with the Delta Airlines, but I think that we have to make sure that the covenants are binding and enforced and that the state has a role in that. The amendment, I know we can't act on it, also deals with the future rent reductions that have were promised as part of the renegotiation with Northwest Airlines pursuant to the terms of the covenant.
Questions from members? Representative Fulberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Paymar, can you just, for those of us that haven't read the covenants, can you just delineate what they're required to do and what you're worried about? Or
the covenants deal with, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. The covenants deal with the money that was loaned, part of the financial package in 1991 that was loaned to Northwest Airlines. And I believe they have a balance of $245 million.
Representative Holberg, I did speak with the MAC before the hearing, and they are prepared to go through the covenants with us after we have the presentation of the bill. If that would be okay.
Okay, and if I might then just ask a question here, I wasn't here in 1991. I probably would not have supported the deal in 1991, but as I look at the situation now, I kind of scratch my head. I for one think that a major hub is important to the economics of the area. I recognize that the airline industry has suffered greatly since 9/11, barely getting their nose above water, and now we have the fuel cost issues, pretty pervasive through the whole industry. Your bill that requires that any amendment or modifications of the covenants have to be approved by law is probably begging a special session. I'm guessing, you know, that at some point something's going to have to change here, and I'm just curious. I mean, we don't seem like, this is my impression, this bill doesn't seem like we're very business or airline friendly, and is it not possible for the merged airline to just pay off the money and say, see ya? Is that a possibility?
Representative Paymar.
Madam Chair, Representative Fulberg, it's certainly a possibility, but there's no guarantee that if we're, Mr. Hurst testified in front of Representative Atkins' committee, you know, and he, in my opinion, he wasn't making inferences that if we negotiated with Delta, perhaps they'd keep their presence here as a major hub. We have no guarantee one way or the other. But we've heard these kinds of these threats from Northwest Airlines before. I mean, and I think we have a responsibility to protect the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota. I would also submit to you that I think that there's a long way to go relative to this merger. The federal government has to sign off on it. I suspect it's probably not going to happen until next year. We'll probably be in session, so I don't see that we'll need to have a special session. So I guess that's my answer to the question. I'm all for the Metropolitan Airports Commission negotiating with Delta Airlines, and I suspect that there's going to be a large presence here. I mean, Minneapolis-St. Paul is a huge metropolitan area, and we have facilities here, but I don't think that negates the responsibility that Northwest and now Delta has for the taxpayers of the state.
Follow-up, Representative Holberg, and then I have a list of others.
I'm sorry. So, Representative Paymar, if your supposition is incorrect, and weighing the business climate in Georgia, the more favorable conditions at the airports in Detroit, do you have any concerns if they just pay off and pull up stakes, what happens to the economy of the Twin Cities and the greater sub-region?
Okay. Representative Holbrook, Representative Holbrook, I've been in the legislature 12 years. I came right before you did. And being a citizen of the state all my life, we hear we hear these kinds of threats from business. You know, we're hearing it now from the Mall of America, you know, that if we don't come up with, you know, $250 million for a parking ramp, that this project isn't going to be built. I mean, this is a constant thing that we have to deal with, and cities have to deal with it. The state of Minnesota has to deal with it. I just don't think you do business that way. These are binding covenants, and when we, and I think I was not here. Representative Solberg was here. I think probably the only one that was here during the original Northwest Airline agreement. I don't know how you voted, but I know that that was a tough vote for people. There was a lot of pressure. There was a lot of pressure on legislators to bail out this airline. You know, you had Al Chesky, I think, was and Mr. Anderson, who were running it at the time, and there was a lot of suspicion about it. And so people, that was a hard vote for people. And the covenant was that the hub would remain in Minneapolis-St. Paul. They are, in my opinion, they're breaching that covenant.
Representative Solberg.
He's absolutely right. It was a very difficult situation. We weren't given very good choices at the time. But the agreement that was negotiated was particularly for the metropolitan area here was the hub and headquarters. And that was the covenant that were in place. It was done in a special session called by Governor Carlson. The fact is, I ended up flying back from Boston at the time because I was in school at the time. But I think that we needed to have some responsibility to make sure that the negotiated deal that was done was a contract, that they live up to the contract. And have some excuse that, times have changed and fuel prices are high. Fuel prices were high then in relative. So I do think the legislature has a responsibility to step up to the plate to make sure that the deal is a deal and the contract is a contract. And if there's, you're absolutely right, they could pay it off and walk away. But then maybe we would have Continental come in as a hub and others come in as a hub. I mean, this is a big market here. It's not the type of thing that they're going to walk away and say, we're not going to have any airplanes out here. Hubs are important, but employment is important as well. In that same deal, we negotiated the Chisholm operation. And there was some money put into that operation for my trip RV. And one of the big things we had in there is, and we have held our feet to the fire, is an employment level. And they wanted to change that. And we said no.
And Madam Chair, I would add that there were 1,000 jobs that were promised to the city of Duluth in that whole arrangement. And Northwest Airlines, made a business decision not to do that. There's a track record here. I don't know if you want to hear from Representative Atkins.
I actually have one last question I have a question from Representative Biskin and Representative Lanning. I'm sorry about my phone. And then we'll go to Representative Atkins.
Madam Chair, mine was just to that point.
Okay, Representative Atkins.
And very quickly, it's just nobody's taking these, we're not driving them to the airport to send them out of town with either of the two bills. It's simply if they breach the agreement. So if they make that choice, then both bills simply require full enforcement of the agreement. So we're not being unfriendly at all. And in fact, I would welcome any sort of opportunities that Northwest and Delta may present to us. And I brought one with me, a fellow from Thomson Reuters, to talk about possibly an IT headquarters here in Minnesota. But in the event that they choose to breach the contract, this just simply says that we're going to fully enforce the agreement, just like we would have any other business or any other Minnesota citizen.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to make a comment and then ask if the authors might want to comment on that. Madam Chair, it feels to me like we're doing nothing more than shadow boxing here. I've heard the words binding covenants. I've heard the words that we look at what's in place right now as being law and shouldn't be breached. So I'm thinking if this bill doesn't pass and the current covenants are breached, there's probably going to be a lawsuit and it'll be settled in court. If we pass this bill and the covenants are breached, there's going to be a lawsuit, and it's going to be settled in court. I guess I'm not quite sure why we're heading down this road. It feels good, all right, but it's kind of like, and we really, really mean it, is what we're doing here.
Representative Atkins,
to respond to that.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Biskin, it is not shadowboxing at all. There is a concern shared by many beyond the walls of the Capitol that in the event that the legislature doesn't say that we expect full enforcement of this agreement, that there may be folks that would not choose to fully enforce the agreement. And you can read into that what you will, there are grave concerns shared by a lot of folks that in the event that we don't do something here to demand full enforcement of the agreement, that certain folks might not do so.
Representative Fiskin.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Atkins, is it your contention then that without this bill, if the agreements are not fully enforced, that there would probably be no lawsuit?
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's the double negative of Representative Vincent has thrown me off a little bit. If Northwest steps up and does precisely what they're required to under the contract, there will be no lawsuit. All they have to do is comply. And Delta, we've got the president of Delta coming on Monday. And if we get assurances from them that they'll just comply, there will be no lawsuit. That's what everybody's hoping for, and I think that would be the best outcome of all.
Members, I'm going to officially call this meeting to order. We now have a quorum. Representative Tamar, I will move that House File 4015 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Rules. Is that correct? It's got to go to Rules because of deadline. And be re-referred to the Rules Committee. All right.
It was before Rules already, was it?
I think it has to go back to Rules for each committee deadline that it's met.
Madam Chair, to
Representative
that point, with the recommendation to pass.
Yes, that is the comment, that it be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Rules Committee. All right. There is the amendment that is the 84015A2, that is the author's amendment. I will move that amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. All right. With that, I will renew my motion that House File. Well, wait, we haven't heard from the MAC yet. So, Representative Paymar.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lanning.
I think I was on the list.
You weren't. I'm sorry. I want to make certain that we hear from MAC before we pass both of these bills, but I think what I want to do is let you guys both present your bills. Hear from the MAC once, because if they're the same subject, there's no reason to have people coming back and forth to the table. We are trying to get out of here before session at 9. So I'm going to call on Representative Lanning, then we're going to have Representative Atkins. We're going to have you present your bill, but we're not going to move your bill until we deal with Representative Tamer. So Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think a couple corrections. The session is at 9:30. Is my recollection from our session yesterday. And secondly, Representative Tamar, I think you said House File 4415, and so for the record, we need to make sure we've got the right number here on the bill.
Wait till you see 4415.
I can hardly wait.
I'm sorry.
Just another surprise that may be around the corner here. Madam Chair, members, with or without this bill, I think the state needs to use every means possible to hold the airline accountable for the agreements that they've entered into. Absolutely, we need to do that. I have a concern about the last couple lines, 112 through 114. It seems to me that anytime you've got covenants, legal documents that have people have agreed to, you're going to have different interpretations. I'm sure that different folks might look at the same language and have different interpretations as to what it means. And if we adopt this language, it seems to me that if anyone in the legislature says that's not the way I interpret this language, it's going to kick it right back to the legislature. And we're, by these last two lines, it seems to me we're taking away any power or capability on the part of the Airport Commission to render some judgments on behalf of the state as to what is the interpretation of that language. It seems to me we're taking on, we're putting the legislature here with this language in the position of being able to have a different interpretation about any words or words in those covenants, and it just seems to me that's going a little bit too far. Any reaction, Representative Tamar?
Madam Chair, I guess I don't view that language or the intent as being quite that rigid. My concern is, and I guess you'll have to ask this question of the representatives of the Metropolitan Airport Commission, but that they, I was concerned about Mr. Steenland's comments in the paper about the spirit of the law and what his intent was. And so it's comfort language to this legislator that what MAC, whatever agreements, arrangements, negotiations occur between the MAC and Delta Airlines, that the state of Minnesota, the legislature has a final say on it. That's the comfort language for me. I understand if you think that's perhaps a little over the top, but I don't see it being problematic.
Representative Lanning.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Tamar, to say to modify, I can see eliminate and amend, of course, as key words here, that I don't think they should be able to do that. But the word modify, it seems to me, can also relate to interpretation. And that I just think is going too far with this language.
It sort of has been a work in progress, and Representative Hornstein, of course, has been gone for the last couple of days, so I'm sort of pitching in. I think that we can wordsmith this and have a bill that people can feel comfortable with on the House floor.
Representative Lanning? All right. Any further questions on this bill? All right. Representative Adkins, I am going to have you present your bill so that we can have the MAC address both of the bills when they come up to attempt to expedite this process. Representative Adkins.
And Madam Chair, before you do, I just want to say to the other members here, we're supposed to be a caucus even though session starts at 9:30.
That is correct. Representative Adkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And with the exception of a couple opening sentences, I'm going to limit my comments just to the differences between the two bills, because I think you have a good flavor for what the direction is. The point of my bill is simply to hold Northwest Airlines, perhaps it becomes Delta, accountable, just like we would any other Minnesota business or any other Minnesota citizen. We have a $500 million investment in Northwest. Like I say, we just want to have them hold up their end of the bargain in exchange for our $500 million investment. They made some agreements. That's all we want them to do, is just live up to their end of the bargain. The differences between the bills are threefold. The 4207 applies to more than just the MAC. It provides that full enforcement will be sought by the state, by any commissioner, by any department, in addition to the MAC, because obviously we have the ability under the original covenant to enforce these agreements. So it's a little bit broader in that context. Secondly, it requires or makes available all contract damages. Just like in any normal contract, there's incidental and consequential and other damages that a non-breaching party can avail themselves of. The Representative Hornstein and Representative Tamar's bill requires repayment and a forfeiture of the prospective lease arrangement. This one does that, but also to the extent that there are other contract damages that could be available in the event of a breach, such as consequential or incidental damages, those would all also be available. That is important because, just yesterday, Commissioner McElroy indicated in an email to me that the direct and indirect economic impact of this in the event of a breach could be as much as $400 million a year. That's his figure, not mine. I thought it might be in the neighborhood of about $300 million a year. He said $400 million. You take that over 5 years, you're talking consequential damage to the state of Minnesota in the neighborhood of $2 billion. Struck me that damage possibility being available is important. And the final change, or the final difference, is that my bill does not require approval by law. With the fact that this applies to the state, the commissioner, the department, the MAC, seemed to me to be appropriate in terms of as long as they fully enforce. Obviously, if they do not, there would be problems with the legislature if they failed to do so. But it would not require special legislation. It would not require the legislature coming back into session to approve how they fully enforce the agreement. So those are the three changes, and with that, I'd appreciate your support.
Questions from members? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Atkins, I just heard you describe a consequential damage. Can you give me an example of an incidental or liquidated damage related to this? I'm sure you spent lots of time thinking about it. So.
Representative Atkins.
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, liquidated damages are generally where they place in it. If the bridge doesn't get done on time, you're going to pay $5,000 more a day or $50,000 more a day. In this case, it appears that they tried to do something like that, but all it required was repayment. So I don't know that there'd be any further liquidated damage available. Incidental damages are the sorts of things that, to the extent you have to go through things to seek those damages. The main one, though, is the consequential damage. And I'll give you one additional example with respect to that. If I hired you to come in and fix my furnace, and we entered into a $2,000 contract, you were going to do that. You came in and you messed it up, and it burnt my house down. My damages wouldn't just be the $2,000. It would be the $300,000 or whatever my house happens to be worth, because it's a foreseeable consequence of you're breaching the contract if you failed to do it and the house burned down. The same holds true. Northwest knew when they entered into this that we weren't just doing it to give them money. We wanted those jobs. We wanted the hub. We wanted the headquarters there. And according to Commissioner McElroy, it's about a $400 million annually, the economic impact. That's why we made the investment that we did, and that's the foreseeable consequence if they breach the contract.
And Mr. Madam Chair and Representative Atkins, is this bill going to go to civil then?
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, it is simply full enforcement of a contract. I don't know that it necessarily, and it hasn't been requested to go anywhere else. We should have, this is, to put it bluntly, we ought not to have a bill like this. And I suspect that any committee would say that full enforcement of contracts is important. The concern here is more one of just making sure that our administration, our Metropolitan Airports Commission, our legislature fully enforces the agreements that we entered into. So for me, and I think for the folks in Minnesota that support this bill, it's more just about making sure that we hold these folks accountable, just like we would any other Minnesota business or any other Minnesota resident.
Representative Holberg.
I'm sorry, just one more question, Madam Chair. Did the covenants reference incidental consequences, consequential liquidated or other damages in the covenant?
Representative Atkins.
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, thank you for the questions. Just like any other contract, they don't need to, and they did not. And they tried to spell out terms that would limit their damages to just paying back. But the way the Minnesota law applies, and I think most judges would find, is that there's contract damages beyond those that are just mentioned in the face of the contract.
All right. Seeing no further questions from members, I'm going to ask the representative from the MAC to please come forward.
Madam Chair, are we also going to hear from representatives from the airlines this morning?
Representative Holberg, if they're here and they'd like to, please let them come forward as well. We should let the MAC go first. Please go ahead and state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, good morning. My name is Jeff Hamill, Executive Director of the Metropolitan Airports Commission, and with me today is Tom Anderson, our General Counsel. I'm here to kind of give you an overview of the covenants and requirements that were negotiated in two important documents that the Commission has negotiated over the last 20, 15 years. and Tom would provide you with, I think, a good deal of the detail that you may want to further explore. I want to start off by saying, first of all, it's a pleasure to be here, and thank you very much for the opportunity. First of all, you need to understand that I have been with the Airports Commission for over 30 years. I was here in 1978 when deregulation occurred with the National Transportation System, and the entire industry kind of went into a hiatus, which is what it's been going through for the past three decades. Tom and I were both involved in the 1991 negotiations, were both involved in the 2007 negotiations, and have been here consistently through the entire discussion. So we do have a long history of being involved in these issues. Secondly, we watch on a daily basis the events taking place. It was almost 3 years ago that we had consultants who done a first analysis for us on merger scenarios, such as a Delta Northwest merger, a Northwest United merger, and a whole variety of other sorts of potential scenarios that could have possibly developed. So this whole issue is not new to us. It is not something that has surprised us. This is a continuously evolving industry full of some controversy, but constant change and constant turmoil. Number two, but going back to the very early days of the first agreement, the negotiation in 1991 and 92, let me remind you that the Minnesota State Legislature and a combined committee of the House and the Senate, reviewed and approved all of the details of the 1992 negotiation. And it was only after legislative review and approval that was signed off and became an agreement between the MAC, the state of Minnesota, and Northwest Airlines. We're here briefly today because I know the time is a premium to talk about two significant events or developments and negotiations in the history of the MAC with Northwest Airlines and the state. The first is 1992. In 1992, MAC and the state of Minnesota entered into a financial arrangement with Northwest Airlines. We did that for two reasons. One, to help Northwest Airlines maintain its operations based in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, and to serve the state of Minnesota. And secondly, quite frankly, to help Northwest Airlines remain financially viable. If you may remember, you may not, but in 1992, Northwest Airlines was for the first time on the verge of bankruptcy, and we believe that the financial package offered by the Airports Commission and the concessions made by the employees of Northwest Airlines are the reason why the company did not go into bankruptcy in the early 1990s. What we did at that time was issue a $270 million general obligation bond and provide an additional $45 million of MAC funds for a total contribution of $315 million to Northwest Airlines in 1992. Since that time, they have paid back the $45 million cash advance, and they've never missed a payment on the $270 million since 1992. They've never missed a payment. The payments continue to come into the MAC, and we fully expect the payments will either continue based on how events develop or evolve, or they will in fact reimburse MAC in compliance with the conditions of the covenant of the agreements that we've negotiated. Northwest has never come to us and asked for forgiveness of this loan, and we believe that because of that, they will pay what they agreed to pay. The airline agreed basically to maintain a headquarters operation in Minnesota, to maintain a hub operation, to maintain certain employment levels within the state of Minnesota, Duluth and Hibbing. In 2004, that was renegotiated to incorporate, that deal was to incorporate a force majeure provision, basically trying to ensure that Minneapolis-St. Paul would not experience greater levels of employee reduction or fluctuations than any place out there national system. Let me just simply say that if you ask the question, did in fact this 1992 agreement benefit the state of Minnesota and did it pay off, the answer is, in my view, absolutely yes. In 1992, we had 16 million passengers on board, getting aboard airplanes in those days. Today, total passengers flying out of Minneapolis-St. Paul. And today, Northwest Airlines transports more than 23 million passengers a year, significant increase. In 1992, there were 220,000 operations by Northwest Airlines. Today, we have somewhere near 315,000 operations operated by Northwest Airlines. In 1992, we had no service to Asia. Today, we have 21 international markets served with 8 international markets compared to 1992, and now we have Asian service. The bottom line is that Northwest Airlines has grown the airline. We've seen significant employment to the point where today the Airports Commission's impact on the economy of the state of Minnesota is somewhere in the area of $10.7 billion a year in jobs, taxes, financial impact on the state. Up significantly from 1992, and that's every single year that money coming into the state's coffers. Of that $10 billion, we believe that close to $7 billion of that is tied directly to the operations of Northwest Airlines, and it's in fact employment and all the services and sales and services they provide in the state of Minnesota. That's the 1992 deal. Now we come to 2007, where we renegotiated our agreements. with Northwest Airlines because of the bankruptcy that the company is experiencing over the last 2 years, from 2005 to 2007. I will tell you that it is my belief that the 2007 negotiation has strengthened the agreement that goes back to 1992. We spent 22 months in negotiation for the 2007 deal. These things are complicated. They are involved. They take a great deal of time and a lot of technical background and knowledge. Let's talk about the basic deal points, and I'll let your questions and answers get to the specific details you're concerned about. In the 2007 negotiation, there were several important benefits that, in fact, were built into the document. Number one, Northwest Airlines agreed not to reject the commitments that they made in 1992. Because they were in bankruptcy, they could have come into the Metropolitan Airports Commission and basically said, you know something? We have a legal right in bankruptcy to reject the building, to reject the loan, to reorganize, to reject the headquarters building and start this airline someplace else all over again, or at least reject these obligations, wipe out the debt, and begin all over again in Minnesota. But the reality is that they did not reject these obligations. GO-15 and GO-13, general obligation bonds 13 and 15, were renewed, and they basically recommitted to continue to make those payments. At that same time, they reaffirmed their commitment to maintain headquarters and to maintain a hub in the state of Minnesota. Our belief is that the hub and headquarters combined result in a guaranteed level of employment to the state of Minnesota and continued operations of this airline. They also further extended the existing lease another 5 years, committing to even a longer period of time to serve in the state of Minnesota and meeting these obligations and these needs. At the end of the day, we believe that the 2007 package is a stronger financial package and more beneficial than the 1992 document was to the state of Minnesota. That's number one. Number two, the agreement has helped MSP place itself in a stronger position competitively in the national air transportation market of the United States. Our airport has an extraordinary reputation. One of the things that we were dealing with is the cost, what it costs an airline company to transport passengers through our airport. As a result of this agreement, we talk about revenue sharing, we talk about reducing to the airline and giving back potentially up to $200 million of concessions. Look at it the other way. This agreement reduced some of the costs to all the airlines, not just Northwest Airlines, but to all the airlines to have a lower operating cost in Minneapolis-St. Paul without damaging or negatively impacting our financial ability to meet all of our obligations. By reducing that cost, the cost per plane passenger for airline companies to serve this community has been reduced. Lower passenger costs to the airline means that they can run more passengers through these facilities, keeping this airport more competitive and increasing utilization of the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport, generating more revenue as more passengers come through. The bottom line is, and the real numbers here are not losing $200 million, the real number is that between now and the next 14 years through 2020, the Airports Commission is going to receive more than $1.3 billion of payments to the MAC for passenger throughput and the renting and leasing of facilities at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. In other words, we made, I think, a good financial decision that ensures our financial security, makes the airport more competitive with lower overall costs to the airline companies, encouraging more utilization, more passenger throughput, and more economic vitality to the state of Minnesota. Number three, competition. Minneapolis-St. Paul has never rejected an airline request to serve this community. Southwest Airlines is not in Minneapolis-St. Paul because they've chosen in the boardroom of Southwest in Dallas, Texas, not to be here. Southwest Airlines will come when they decide to come. If they were to call us tomorrow and say, do you have gates available? The answer is absolutely we have gates. We have a half a dozen gates in the D-Pod of Lindbergh Terminal Building. We have gates available in the Humphrey Terminal Building. How many gates do you want, and when do you want to start business serving this community? The reality is, if an airline is not here today, it's because it chose not to be here. But in this agreement, we built flexibility to make sure that we not only have six or seven gates available in Lindbergh, but that they are contiguous gates. They are next to one another. For the Southwest, for example, or anybody, JetBlue, you name the company, if they want to come to Minneapolis-St. Paul, they'll get one gate on the E concourse, another gate on the C concourse, another gate on the D concourse. They get five or six gates if they need them. Gates 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on the D, all lined up, which is what they need to be competitive so their passengers don't have to go from one end of the terminal to the next to make a connection. That flexibility was built into this agreement so that, in fact, new airlines can enter this market easily and on very short notice. And finally, as part of this negotiation in 2007, we cleared the air regarding the whole noise mitigation program of the Metropolitan Airports Commission and the two lawsuits that we were facing with the city of Minneapolis and communities around the airport. And what happened out of this negotiation is that Northwest Airlines recommitted and agreed to a $127.65 million package to insulate another 10,000 homes in the Minneapolis-St. Paul market, bringing the total expense for noise mitigation in this airport to over $450 million. No airport in the United States has had a more aggressive, more thorough, and more complete comprehensive noise mitigation program than Minneapolis-St. Paul. And that's happened because of the strength of the airlines that serve Minneapolis-St. Paul. So these four items, recommitting to the deal, continuing to keep the airport cost-effective, making gates available for increased competition, and noise mitigation commitments renewed, are all part of what we got in 2007. And we believe this has strengthened the agreement. So that's where I stand today, Madam Chair. I want to be more factual than I do want to be political in my process, but these are things I think need to be said. With that, Tom Anderson and I are able to answer questions on the details of the covenant for any requirements you'd like to discuss.
All right, questions from members. All right, seeing none, is there anyone else here in the audience who wishes to testify for or against these bills? All right, seeing none, I would renew my motion that House File 4015 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. All right. I will make the motion that House File 4207 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. All right. With that, members, we're going to revert back to House File 4223 that we've already walked through and talked about. I will make the motion that House File 4223 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the rules, the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. And first, I will move the SCS 3857A3 delete everything amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Then I will move the SCS 3857A-4 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. I then will move the delete amendment, sections 2 and sections 11, which is the oral amendment that I talked about. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Is there oops, go ahead. I'm sorry, so on this A3 amendment, we're only putting in 2 and 11 and everything else is staying on the table, or?
No. On the A3, we're putting everything in except sections 2 and 11 is what we just deleted.
I'll wait till you get everything
that's
in the table.
Everything's in there. I was just going to ask if there's anyone in the audience. So if there's questions, Representative Polberg, go ahead.
Madam Chair, I have concerns about Section 3, and it has to do with what information is public by virtue of this form, and I'm a little concerned by some of this becoming public. The chemicals used, one of those things, if they're flammable or sometimes there's chemicals that are used in industry that you really don't want the public to know. I do have some concerns on that part of the bill. And
Representative Holbrook, I have had conversations with Representative Lanning about potentially deleting those sections from the bill. However, Representative Hornstein has been out with a family emergency.
Right.
And so I said right before you came in that
I'm sorry.
It is likely that this will not be the vehicle for those two bills, but they didn't delete them out in the Senate yesterday, partly for that reason. But I'm happy to continue to work with you and Representative Lanning, because the goal at the end of the day is to have this deal be a non-controversial bill that we can just send right to the governor when the Senate sends it over. So if that's acceptable with you, Representative Holbrook.
Madam Chair, what would be the other section that was in question?
It was, they were both Representative Hornstein's bills, and the last one was Section 2 on page 13 of the bill. It's the dedication fee.
Oh. All right. Thank
okay.
you.
All right. Further questions from members? Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. we asked for those two sections to be removed because if you want this to go through with no controversy, those two sections in it would bring lots of controversy.
That's correct, Representative Lanning. So that is my goal. Okay, further questions from members? All right, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? All right, seeing no further discussions, I will renew my motion that House File 4223, as amended, be recommended to pass and be sent to the Rules Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, members. We have the minutes, but we have we're going to do a brief informational hearing on House File 3978. Representative Scalvi is going to present this. Members, the reason this is here is this is an issue that is going to be worked on during the interim, and it has local government impact, and we want to make sure that the stakeholders know that this is going on so local governments aren't surprised as we move forward. So, Representative Scalvi, please be brief.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and members of the committee. And on behalf of Representative Hornstein, we're presenting House File 3978 for an informational hearing. And the purpose of this bill is to better target state land use planning and development funds and reduce the number and length of vehicle trips to assist in meeting Minnesota's greenhouse gas reduction goals. And we have two people here today with more detail for the purpose of the bill. And we have John Bailey from the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund and Will Schroer from ICF International.
All right. Members, I'm going to put you on hold for 1 second in case people have to leave to go to their respective caucus. We do need to approve the minutes. So I would move that the minutes for Wednesday, March 19th, be approved. Questions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. Representative Scalzi, go ahead.
I have two presenters here. They'll introduce themselves for the record.
Great. Go ahead. State your name for the record.
William Schroer, ICF International.
John Bailey, Greater Minnesota Housing Fund.
Okay. Who's going first?
I will. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Scalzi, for the opportunity to say a few words regarding the Minnesota Climate Change Action Group. The MCAG was a year-and-a-half-long process commissioned jointly by the legislature and by Governor Pawlenty to examine how the state could reduce its emissions of greenhouse gases and contribute, hopefully, to climate stabilization. We recently wrapped up that process. The results of that process are public on the state and the process's website, www.mmclimatechange.us. One of the recommendations out of that process, made unanimously by the substantially broad stakeholder group, was to do better and more active coordination of the planning between transportation and land use. Minnesota's driving has increased faster than its population for many years now, and most of the driver of that, there's certainly some social trends associated, most of the drivers of that has been the fact that our land use spreads out ever further, requiring people to drive ever more distances and ever more often between destinations. The Climate Change Action Group made a series of recommendations about how planning could be better done, how the state could facilitate better planning at the state and local level, and I'm here mostly just to answer questions about that process if the committee has any, and to draw the link for you, which I think is increasingly obvious to most people, that land use planning contributes directly, both goodly, both well and poorly, depending on how it's done, to emissions of climate change gases. So with that brief introduction, I then turn it to John Bailey to talk about how the bill under discussion would address that link.
Great. Mr. Bailey, go ahead.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Bailey, and I work at the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund. We've assembled private philanthropic resources for the creation of affordable housing in the 80 counties of Greater Minnesota. At the fund, I manage the Sustainable Investment Alliance, which is an initiative of the state's leading environmental, community development, and philanthropic institutions. The SAA has been working for over 5 years on strategies and policies to improve community-based planning both in the metro area and throughout Greater Minnesota. The goal of House File 3978 is to align state infrastructure investments with Minnesota's bold greenhouse gas reduction goals.
I would like to go into a little bit more detail on how the state influences something as localized as land use. The powers of land use, zoning, and planning are rightfully delegated to local units of government. States do, however, make major infrastructure decisions and establish the fiscal playing field for local government through state tax policy, development financing tools, regulatory authority, and tax incentives. The state of Minnesota directly invests tens of millions of dollars each year in transportation, economic development, housing, agriculture, conservation, as well as a host of other vital funding programs. Better aligned and more integrated state investments will be necessary if the state is to meet its climate change goals, in addition to other important economic and social goals. This is just like any successful large or small business that aligns its investments with its long-term goals. So how does House File 3978 provide this alignment and integration? It primarily does two things. First, it tasks the Environmental Quality Board to inventory existing state funds that could be available for distribution in an incentive-based system. We believe that EQB's existing interagency coordination charter, the board is comprised of several of the governor's cabinet members, would be an important aspect of this process. Government often operates in specialized silos. Public policies that invest resources, provide tax incentives, and regulate development are spread throughout several agencies that have different and, frankly, sometimes conflicting agendas. Cross-silo coordination is critical to the success of these initiatives. Second, it would establish a working group comprised of commissioners, local government officials, business leaders, and nonprofit organizations whose purpose would be to develop strategies, practices, and a process for implementing state-level coordination through such an incentive-based system. Critically, the work group would also be responsible for identifying funding opportunities to support the technical assistance, tools, and resources required to assist local governments to meet these goals. Many local governments strive to create quality growth in their communities, but have struggled to take funding as atrophied for community planning activities. I would end by noting that there will be a great opportunity to shape development over the next generation as Minnesota adds 1.3 million people over the next 30 years. In fact, two-thirds of the development on the ground by 2050 will be built between now and then. I've spent my time talking about climate change, but I would also suggest that implementing these policies will provide a whole host of co-benefits, such as the fiscal savings through more efficient use of existing infrastructure, improved water quality, and enhanced mobility for all, especially for seniors, who are the state's fastest-growing demographic group, to name just a few. Thank you, and I look forward to any questions.
All right, questions from members. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In looking at the delineation of the members of this group, on page 2, under subsection 4, you have 12 members, at least one of them must be from local government, and then on lines 15 and 16, you have two representatives of local government appointed by the EQB board. I wonder why that duplicity.
Madam Chair, I see the two representatives from local government, and then...
You're Mr. Schroeder, correct?
I'm Mr. Bailey.
You're Mr. Bailey. Okay, sorry. Mr. Bailey, sorry. We have to just identify who's talking for the record because it's an audio tape.
Okay. Okay. I think it's probably just a flaw, and we can correct that next year.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Madam Chair, this bill is not going to be passed this year.
No, this is an informational hearing so that people know that this is out there and people are going to be working on it between now and next year. I don't want anybody to be surprised.
All right. I'm just going to give my two cents worth very quickly.
Great.
Being on the edge of growth in the metropolitan area, and a lot of this is kind of duplicative of what Met Council's tried to do, and witnessing how ineffective some of these controls are, as evidenced by the explosive growth in the collar counties to get out from underneath all of these controls, which in many instances do not reflect the market. And I believe the market's the strongest force relative to housing as opposed to anything that government can do. And so as you look at these strategies or elements, it would be really nice to see some components of that look at that issue of that, you know, there's market forces that are going to totally undermine any investment if the investments aren't reflective in large degree to the needs of the market. And when we've seen the changes over the last 3 years in the housing market and what's happening and the issues with the collar counties and the empty neighborhoods and the foreclosures, I mean, I think we have to be really, really careful when we drive certain things to happen and it's not reflective of the market, and then the kickback, if you will, can be very devastating to communities.
Thank you, Representative Holbert. Representative Hausman.
Madam Chair, I just was going to request if they have, I don't think we have their testimony, and it sounded like yours might be prepared, and we could get copies of them. Since it is for information, it might be helpful.
Mr. Bailey, if you, and Mr. Schroeder, if you would just provide those, that'd be great.
Oh, is this, is this what he was reading from?
Mr. Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is a that's a handout I provided. It's very close to my testimony, but I can also provide my testimony to...
Well, no, if it's similar to this, we do have that in our package.
Great. Further questions from members? All right, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? All right, seeing none, Representative Scalzi, thank you so much for presenting this bill. And testifiers, thank you for coming forward.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and members of the committee.
All right, Representative Hausman.
Well, Madam Chair, it occurred to me when I was reading, realizing you were laying this out for interim study, that I might tell you about something that I'm working on, should any members of this committee wish to be part of a working group. And that is a governance issue around the planning and management of transit. There is growing desire all around the state for transit. There is surprisingly a lot of intercity private service, and the question is how can we begin to understand what is there and where are the gaps. But specifically in the metropolitan area, this issue of that arbitrary seven-county line that doesn't seem to work anymore, and in that transportation bill, we didn't get rid of that, and we layered kind of another bureaucracy on top of that and have money going to both entities. And I just think we have potentially a stranger sort of governance around transit in the metropolitan area. And the issue of the taxing district, because there is an arbitrary line, may simply not work anymore. And I would just give as an example, have I got my city, Eden Prairie is in Hennepin County? Have I got the right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say, you know, Scott and Carver determined not to go into the taxing district, and I can actually understand that. But any residents in their counties who may desire to use transit, all they really have to do is drive into Eden Prairie, and we'll have the same things developing there as we do in that Cedar Avenue and 35W. And at a certain point, you just have to face the facts of that transit taxing district. Is that simply not workable? Are those lines too rigid, and is that a funding source, maybe not a workable thing? So those issues around governance, we'll have a working group, and if anyone would like to be part of that, I'd be happy to hear from them.
Representative Fulbert.
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, count me in, and I think the duality of the sales tax joint powers board,
yeah,
and the transit taxing district lines and the seven county metro line, we have got just a growing mess on our hands. And I mean, Lakeville's in the process right now of trying to negotiate a deal with Met Council to come in because of the UPA. And it's a mess, and it is so hard for the public to understand how all of this works. And we got to do something.
All right. Great. Further questions or comments from members? Seeing none, this meeting is adjourned.